Okay. Last week we went through the story in Perek Tet. We read through the whole Perek. Avimelech's attack, or Avimelech's first effort to force himself as ruler of Shechem, in so doing, executing barbarically, literally bloodthirsty, vicious attack on his family, kills all 70 of his brothers, the sons of half-brothers, the children of Gideon, misses, of course, one Yotam, one young last one remaining of the house, although we never hear from him again, so we don't really know what becomes of him. There's a similar story in Sefer Malachim, where the queen, daughter of Izevel, of Atalia, murders all of the remaining children of the house of David, so that she was married to Yoram, king of from descendants of the house of David, married to the descendants of of David HaMelech. Although she was the daughter of Achab and Izevel from Malchut Yisrael, she ended up being queen of Malchut Yehuda. In order to solidify her reign, because she was married to Yoram, son of Yehoshaphat, in order to solidify her reign, she executes the entire lineage of the house of David, every remaining descendant.
What was her name?
Ataliah, with an ayin. And the story is that she missed one, because the Nevi'im secretly went and hid a baby by the name of Yoash and hid him in the Beis HaMikdash, which is the domain, one domain where Ataliah couldn't go, because the kings were never allowed into the domain of the Beit HaMikdash. There were two separate domains. He was actually hidden in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Right, and it's a famous story. And then in the end, when he was old enough, they brought him out and they announced his existence and his reign, and he would take over the kingdom, and Ataliah eventually was killed. So there is a similar story to this in Sefer Malachim, the difference being that there the baby was the heir to the throne legitimately. So when Ataliah was killed, he regained the legitimate throne. Here, there is no throne to speak of legitimately. We're talking about the people of Shechem, and we're talking about Avimelech's effort to usurp that throne. So when Avimelech dies, the story ends, and everybody goes home. We never hear from Yotam again in that regard, but nonetheless, he plays a role, and a significant one, in the beginning of the story. And it's that role that I wanted to look at this morning. Yotam, in his opening, in the opening part of the story, after Avimelech kills all of his brothers, Yotam finds a moment where, after they anoint Avimelech as king, he stands on the top of some mountain or hill. Actually, he stands on the top of Har Gerizim, if I remember correctly. Rabbi Amod Barosh Har Gerizim. And he declares to Baalei Shechem, he makes a speech. And in this speech, he presents to them a parable. The parable is designed to reflect the events that have transpired and to warn the people of the imminent danger in what they are about to do. So it's that parable that I want to review this morning and look at in more depth. We read it briefly last week as we read through the whole parak. Now that we have the storyline, I want to go back and look at this Mashal in more depth. So we are in Perek Tet, starting with Pasuk Vav. Pasuk Zayin.
Real poor.
Welcome back to all of the various travelers coming and going. So we're going to read through the Mashal again, and we'll begin to analyze this. Vayagidu li Yotam vayelach v'yamod b'rosh ha'grizim vayisak kolo vayikra. Yotam goes and he stands at the top of ha'grizim, from which he makes this proclamation. Ha'grizim, we talked about last week, top one of the two mountains around Shechem, from which the blessings and curses were delivered, and the significance of that we will hopefully come back to. Vayomer lehem, he tells them the following: Shimu elai ba'alei Shechem, v'yishma lechem Elohim. Hear me, people of Shechem, God will hear you. Halach halchu ha'itzim limshoach alehem melech. The trees went to anoint for themselves a king. They said to the olive, "You reign over us." Should I abandon my produce, the oil through which God and men are honored? V'halachti lanua al ha'itzim, that I should go and sway over the trees. V'yamru ha'itzim la'te'ena l'chi'at malchi aleinu, and they went to the fig tree. They asked her to reign over them. V'tomer lem ha'te'ena echadalti et motki v'tnuvatni atova. She gave a similar response: should I abandon the sweetness of my produce, meaning the fig, and v'halachti lanu al ha'itzim, that I should hold sway over the trees? V'yamru ha'itzim la'gefen l'chiat malchi aleinu. They went to the grapevine: you reign over us. V'tomer lem ha'gefen echadalti et tiroshi ha'mesameach alim v'anashim v'halachti lanu al ha'itzim. Should I give up my wine, which causes God, which pleases God and man? Yain yisamach levav enosh. And wine makes the heart glad. V'halachti lanua la'itzim. So finally, v'yamru kol ha'itzim al ha'atad, lech ata maloch aleinu. And they went to the bramble bush and they said, "You reign over us." V'yomer ha'atad al ha'itzim, im be'emet atem moshchim oti le'melach aleichem, bo chasu b'tzili. If you truly want me to anoint me as your king, come and take shelter in my shade. How low do you have to go to take shade under the bushes of a bramble or thorn bush? V'im'ayin teitze esh min ha'atad v'tochel et arzeh halavana. If not, the fire that a bramble bush can start will consume even the trees of the cedars of Lebanon. V'ata. Now, this is already, that was the mashal. Now the nimshal. Im be'emet uv'tamim asitem v'atem lichu et avimelech. If truly and sincerely you appoint avimelech as your king, v'im tova asitem im yirubal v'im beito. And in this you have done well, you have repaid avimelech, Gidon and his household well. V'im gugmul yado asitem lo. And repaid him according to his deeds. Parenthetically, what are his deeds? Asher nilcham avi alechem, vayashlech et nafsho mineger, vayatzel etchem miyad midyan. My father fought for you, and he sacrificed his life for you, and he saved you from the hands of Midian. Ve'atem kamtem al beit avi hayom, v'targu et banav shivim ish alev anachat. You today have arisen to slaughter 70 people, 70 of his sons on one stone. V'atamlichu et avimelech ben amato ba'leishchem ki achichem hu. And you have appointed Avimelech as your king. Ve'im be'emetu v'tamim asitem, back to the nimshal. If this is acting in truth and in loyalty with Yerubal v'im beito ayom azeh, simchu b'avimelech v'yismach gam hu b'chem. Rejoice with Avimelech, and he shall rejoice with you. V'im ayin teitze eish mi'avimelech v'tochal et ba'leishchem. And if not, then the fire that will come from Avimelech, from the bramble, will consume the ba'leishchem v'et beit milo. V'teitze eish mi'ba'leishchem u'mi beit milo v'tochal et Avimelech. This fire works two ways. It'll consume the people of Shechem, and it will consume Avimelech. And after that declaration of treason, Vayanos Yotam Ivrach Ve'elech Be'era. Avimelech runs away. Yotam runs away. And we never hear from him again. Okay. That's the Mashal. From a structural point of view, it's actually very interesting. Just from a linguistic point of view, the poetry of the Nimshal, the Mashal, I want to separate the Mashal and the Nimshal for the purposes of our discussions. Everybody understand what the terminology Mashal and Nimshal? Of a parable. The Mashal is the parable. The Nimshal is that which we apply the parable to or learn from, the application, the lesson. How does it work? How do the parallels work? So whenever you have a mashal and you analyze it, first thing you have to understand in the nimshal is the analysis of mashal always requires two steps. The first step is analysis of this is actually has less to do with Tanakh and learning as much as it has to do with literary analysis. If you take a parable or a metaphor, and you have to, and to understand it, you have to do two things. Step one is to have a parable, story of the king.
You have to figure out what it's talking about.
Well, you have to figure out the parallel.
The teaching as we're trying to.
The teaching is step two.
What's
step
the
two?
Thing that's being compared to?
Right. You have to take the parable and you have to analyze what each piece of the story represents, because that's not necessarily self-evident. So the first step is to identify. I have trees and I have fruit trees and I have brambles and I have requests for king and I have all kinds of pieces in the story. So the first step is to figure out what the pieces of the story parallel to. Once I have that, then I can take the real world parallels and based on the story of the Mashal, try to understand what the lesson the Mashal is trying to convey.
That's the application.
And that's the application. So in the resolution of a Mashal, there's always two steps. Step one is to interpret the Mashal, meaning to understand the pieces of the parable. And step two is to apply the Mashal. Understand the importance. If you don't do step one correctly, then your application or understanding of the lesson is going to be is going to miss the mark.
But we have 10 people here. We could have 10 different.
That's true, and you'll get therefore various interpretations. And we will see at least in the Mefarshim at least two, possibly three different approaches to the Mashal. That's part of the challenge. Correct. But at least in terms of direction, I know where I need to start. We need to start with a analysis of the Mashal itself before we can then jump to step two, which is the message that the conveyor or the author or the speaker is trying to convey by the use of the Mashal. So in this Mashal, and you'll allow me to use the board for this for a moment because I'm going to see the number of in this Mashal, what are the different components that we have?
Trees.
We have trees.
And bramble.
We have a natan. When you said we have trees, which trees are you referring to?
The olive tree and the fig tree.
The
zayat and the...
So we have zayat, te'ina, and gefen. They may refer to three different things. They may refer to one. I'm not sure yet, but we have certainly three different fruit trees.
The vine.
Okay. That's the Geffen. We have the Teina. We have the Atad. The
don't you say I don't have that.
You have other Eitzim, or
reference at the end is to Isaiah HaLevanon.
Do you want to put down Aish?
We have Aish.
Yeah, those are the actual physical components. And then we have in the story itself, essentially two or three parts.
Yotam.
Well, we have the... Yotam is the conveyor, right? Oh, in the story itself of the Mashal, we have three parts. We have...
the offer of the trees.
Right. The request, the trees are looking for a king, so they go and they offer the Zayit, the Tenan, the Geffen, Malchus. So we have the, let's call it the offer, or the search for a king. And the refusal.
Right. The acceptance by him.
And then we have the offer to...
Ramble.
Let's call it the last resort. I don't have any room left, so I'm going to skip the next one. But the last one, of course, is the final step, which is the declaration of the atah. If you mean it sincerely, then fine. And if not, v'teitzei eish. So we'll put that as the fire. Okay? So those are all the different pieces of the mashal. Now, the challenge is going to be if we start putting this back into the story of Avimelech, the parallels are going to sound very nice, and they sound, on the first blush, they sound great mashal for what happened. When you start to analyze it, you see very quickly that there are significant problems with this mashal. Let's start with the Radak, just to show you where our problems begin. Let's take one and pass them down. You may.
I just wanted to... Our learning should be dedicated to Shoshana Leah Bat Moshe.
Shoshana Leah Bat
Harav Moshe.
Harav Moshe.
Today is Sherry's second yard sale.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
No. Second yard
sale. Sounds fun.
Yeah, yeah.
So I meant to say it at the beginning of that. Do you have another sheet?
Here.
Yeah, yeah.
Justin and I share a lot. Oh, here it is.
Lots, and I got more here. So I'll take the extra ones back. I'll need them for Wednesday. So. All right. There's two sides to this. One is a structural breakdown of the mashal. Time permitting, we'll come back to that. That's less critical for us. The other side has the Radak. The Radak, trying to do exactly what we are trying to do, meaning to understand the two stages here, the interpretation of the mashal and then the application of the mashal. So he begins to identify who's who. Umashal ha'etzim heim anshei Shechem. In this mashal, the trees represent the people of Shechem. V'ha'atad Avimelech. And the bramble, of course, represents Avimelech. So at least at the beginning, I have the two parts of this that are fairly easy to identify. The trees. He doesn't mean the Zayit, the Tenan, the Geffen. He means the trees, the Eitzim. Halach halchu ha'etzim. Limshoch l'msol ha'melech. The trees went looking for a king. So this is actually Spatere Anshei Shechem, which I cannot do. Right? Ba'alei Shechem. And the Atad represents Avimelech. So I'm still missing a whole bunch of pieces, right?
Yeah.
Klamar, chasu lehem anashim lehamlich alehem. The trees, meaning the people of Shechem, were short applicants for the position of king. Ki himlichu hapachot shebahem, b'hu avimelech. And therefore they went and they accepted the least appropriate of the ones, the least productive of all the trees, the thorn bush. Tosefet ve'atad avimelech. Which that's the significance. I'm not sure what he means by Tosefet, but the Atad referring to Avimelech. V'chein yavo ad gor na'atad. Similar phrase we find in Bereshit when they come to do a eulogy for Yaakov Avinu on the way back from Mitzrayim. They stop at a place called Goren Ha'atad. Ulefi shebo kotzim gorerim bo hadvarim hatzrichim lishamer me'ahezek. The thorns, gorerim bo advarim hatzrichim lishamer me'ahezek. The thorns of a thorn bush can hurt. They can cause damage. So you have to guard yourself. You have to protect yourself against them. King is chosen for the primary purpose of protecting the people from any evil. Amar ki amelach shebacharu lahem shebacharu hem v'hu avimelach eino ra'ui l'oto atachlit. Yotam essentially is saying, by comparing Avimelech to an atad, he is analyzing the significance of the parallel, of the metaphor, the symbol of the bramble of the thorn bush, that because they chose Avimelech as the least appropriate to reign, Shira'ui sheyusam avuro melech ala am l'shomra meheza. But the purpose of appointing a king is to protect them from evil, from harm. Adarabba, hum mazik lahem. He, the thorn bush, is more trouble for them, is more harmful to them than he will protect them. Hefecha kavana, kmo akotz hameria lemi sheyochazbo. Like the thorn that hurts anybody who grabs it. Or you foul bo, anybody who deals with it. Kein asav himelach ba'am shchem, sharag bahem. Ubiachiv, similarly, Avimelech was harmful to the people of Shechem. He killed them. He killed his brethren. The thorn has no purpose. It only causes harm. That will be the destiny of the people of Shechem for appointing such a king. It's essentially the way most of the Mefarshim understand the story. So what do we have in the Radak's interpretation of the Mashal and his application of the Mashal? To summarize, what the Radak does here, he does two things, remember. He's doing the interpretation of the Mashal and the application of the Mashal. His interpretation of the Mashal is what represents what? Yatar is Avimelech. The Eitzim are Baalei Shechem. And in the interpretation, in the application of the Mashal, he's saying, why is Avimelech compared to a Atad?
Because it only causes irritation.
Because a thorn bush has no positive production. It only does harm. And Avimelech ultimately is the least likely, least appropriate person to reign over them. He will cause them harm. And that's what the Radak's conclusion is. The difficulty in the Radak's interpretation, I think, is self-evident. Namely,
well, he doesn't take all these other pieces.
All these pieces are missing. In other words, if that was the focus of the story,
what do you mean, the story about the
Teina and the Geffen and the Zayid, who are they? And they're a critical part of the Mashal. Who were the Geffen, the Teina, and the Zayit to whom the people of Shechem went to first? And if there are candidates. The problem with the candidates is that they don't necessarily fit. For example, who is the most likely candidate?
Assuming Gidon's dad.
Gidon, right? Who do they go to? in the context of the story, the only one they ever went to for to be king, asking him to be king, and he refuses, is Gidon. So the possibility would be that the Zayin, the Gefen, and the Tanah could be Gidon. The problem?
It's one person and there are three offers.
Number one, it's one person, there are three offers. Number two,
isn't Gidon already dead? I mean, isn't he dead?
So that's part of the story, right? They went to Gidon, he refused, so now he's right.
He's dead, okay.
The chronology is less the issue.
Okay.
Number two. If you're already going to the Geffen, the Tanan, the Zayit, so let's assume they make the offer to Gidon, right? The offer to Gidon, and the refusal, right? So let's go down to this part of the Mashal. In the Mashal, what was the refusal based on?
That they'll lose their special purpose.
Right? Geffen says, my purpose in life is to make wine. If I come and sway over the trees, lanual etzim, that means that I can't
make wine.
And I'm doing something far more important, far more significant, far more enjoyable. Why should I, quote unquote, waste my time reigning over, swaying over, even the phrase lanua ala etzim, to sway over the trees, is an indication that Malchus is essentially
a waste of time.
Did Gidon refuse the Malchus because he felt it was a waste of time?
No.
Gidon's refusal was founded on a very profound religious spiritual sentiment. I will not reign over you. Hashem yimshol b'chem. God is your master, is your reign, is your king. Understanding the spiritual dynamic of the request, Gidon understood that he had to refuse. So if the Mashal is designed to reflect the story of the offer to Gidon, it's a very poor Mashal. Understand the problem? So who else could be a likely candidate if not Gidon?
His son.
Gidon's sons. Right? Yeah. Alternative to Avimelech, the only alternative to Avimelech would be the ones that Avimelech kills, which would be B'nei Gidon. That too is a problem. Why?
They're dead.
Number one, well, so is Gidon, but and they're only dead because Avimelech kills them, but he's not worried about who's alive.
How dead are they?
He's not worried about how dead they are. He's worried about the fact that they were offered and refused.
Mm-hmm.
That's past tense. This was. Now they're dealing with the Atad. The problem with B'nai Gidon is, at least in the story, in the text,
we don't know they were offered the kingship.
We have no information as to whenever being offered the kingship to anybody else. Mm-hmm. Even the fact that Avimelech goes and executes them is strange, because we have no, there's nothing intimated that says that they wanted to reign over Shechem. So the introduction to B'nai Gidon is missing, at least in the story. It's possible, there's pieces of information that we don't have, it's possible that they went initially to, that there was a big leadership crisis, and who is going to rule over Shechem, and Gidon's sons wanted to, and Avimelech came and convinced them to take him. But we don't hear any of that. It's not in the story. So it would be odd that Tanakh would tell us an entire mashal applied to information that's not in the text. That would be problematic. So we're left with a mystery. Who are the Zayit, the Geffen, and the Tanakh? Furthermore, there are other pieces of the mashal that have no application in the reality of the story. For example, in the story, they offer the king to Zai Geffen Vetenau refuse. So then they come and they offer it to the Atad. So says the Radak. The Atad is the bramble. Did they offer Malchus to Avimelech? Did they come to Avimelech and say, okay, the Geffen, the Zayit, and the Tainah refused, you be our king? No. They accepted him because he went and convinced them all. But it was the initiative came from
Avimelech,
not from the people of Shechem. So there's a little bit of an inaccuracy in, more than a little bit, in the whole direction of the Mashal. Remember, he's criticizing the people of Shechem. Only by the by is he criticizing Avimelech. The third lack of parallel is the Zayit, the Geffen, and the Teina. Because it sounds like they went to three different sources. So who are the three? Is Gidon one, the sons of Gidon are a second? What's the Zayit, the Geffen, and the Teina? So, as much as the Radak has given us a direction by telling us that, of course, the Atad somehow is to relate to Avimelech, he's the one ultimately who will destroy them, by telling us that the people of Shechem are the trees, we're left with a gaping hole in terms of the whole picture. What is this Mashal all about? Second of all, that's one. Second of all, in the interpretation of the Radak, there is, not only is there a lack of parallel between the Mashal and the Nimshal, there are pieces of the story in the Nimshal that in fact for Yatam are the primary pieces of the story that are completely missing in the Mashal. For example, what's the primary crime with which the story begins? What's the real core evil with which the story, that the story focuses on, from the perspective of Avimelech, or Avimelech's behavior? Is it the fact that in the rebellion of the people of Shechem, he comes and he puts down the rebellion, or that he attacks the cities? What's the text tells me, the text focuses, and he says, all of this was retribution for it. There's a sin, there's a chet, there's a crime, there's an evil committed.
He kills all the sons of
Gideon. The evil is the execution of his brothers. Correct. The evil is the execution of his brothers. Where in the Mashal is the piece about Avimelech's execution of his brothers? That's the centerpiece of the story. It's after, remember, Yotam is the survivor. Center of Yotam's whole perspective is the execution of his brothers. That's, remember the parentheses that he sticks into the Nimshal? He says, if you want Avimelech and you think you are behaving appropriately by sincerely, just choose Avimelech, and that's how you repay Gidon for all of the good that he did, and you go and execute his 70 sons on one stone, one dead man. All of that, that whole parentheses, is not in the Mashal. You know the expression "Ha'ikar chaser min ha'sefer"? The crux, the core, the essence of it is missing in the Mashal. The rebellion against Gidon, the lack of gratitude to Gidon for all that he did for you, which Yotam puts into the Nimshal, but is not in the Mashal. You understand the problem? So I'm left with a number of mysteries. Another possibility I don't have the source for, another approach to the whole Mashal is offered by, for example, the Mosad of Kook Tanakh, the Dat Mikra. And they take a completely different approach to the Mashal.
Can I erase this?
Sure.
The way they describe the Mashal is that the Zayit, the Geffen, and the Teinah, let's start from here. I leave out the Zayit, the Teinah, and the Geffen, I'm missing a key piece of the story. So who or what would the Zayit, the Geffen, and the Teinah represent? Well, let's start from the actually the Yetzim. The Yetzim, we said, are Ba'alei Shem. Mentioned last week briefly that there's a discussion as to who or what the people of Shechem are. Are they Israelites in Shechem, or are they
Canaanites?
It's fairly clear that the inhabitants of Shechem, the residents of Shechem, are not Israelites. Why do I say that? What evidence do we have that the people of Shechem are not indigenous, are not Israelites, but in fact indigenous Canaanites of the period? The evidence isn't necessarily going to be in the story. Evidence a little broader. They go to the Temple of Baal or Temple of Baal Brit, which. There are periods of history when we were also worshipping Baal, so I'm not sure that that's necessarily conclusive proof. Other proof that they quote, a little more subtle, when you talk about cities inhabited by Israelites, people of Penuel, people of Sukkot, the Navi always uses the term Anshei Penuel or Anshei Sukkot. There are only two cities in Sefer Shoftim, or in Tanakh, really, where the local inhabitants are called the Ba'alei. Ba'alei Shechem
and Ba'alei Yericho.
Both Canaanite cities.
What's the difference of the two? I mean, to use Ba'alei or to use Anshei. Ba'alei is their worshipping
Baal.
Baal.
Right.
But
Ba'alei and essentially is they mean the same thing. Like a husband in Tanakh is an Ish and a Baal. They mean the same thing. But there's a subtlety in the terminology. When you say, refer to Ba'alei Shechem, the Baal people of Shechem, you understand that there's Yericho and Shechem are the two centers of the idolatry of Baal. At least Yericho certainly is. And you see that in Shechem here too. Second of all, when Gaal comes in the end of the story, in the rebellion, and he says to the people of Shechem, why do you pay your allegiance to Avimelech? Your allegiance should be to... Who's the alternative in the story?
Yotam.
When later in the rebellion, when Gaal... Gaal is the rebel.
From someone from Shechem.
Yeah.
He says the allegiance should not be to Avimelech, but to who specifically? Who specifically is very significant.
Zebul.
No. Who does he say they should have appointed as their king, rather than? Chamor Avi Shechem. Now, if that's the same Chamor Avi Shechem from the days of Yaakov Avinu, then he's long dead. So, what does he really mean?
Somebody.
A descendant of the real royal house of Shechem. Why did you go to the child, the illegitimate child of the union of Avimelech, of Gidon, and a Pilegesh,
right,
when you have a royal family in your midst? Chamor Avi Shechem. Well, that puts us back into the world of Canaanites. Days of Yaakov Avinu. Thirdly, Shechem has a unique status in Tanakh, certainly in Sefer Yehoshua. Its unique status, if you remember when we learned Yehoshua, most of you were with us when we did Yoshua. When we went Yoshua, one of the things that we pointed out was that Shechem is the only major city in the period in the region that Yoshua and his army never conquer. They go to Shechem twice for great ceremonies in Hagrizim and Har Eval and for Brit, etc., but they never conquer Shechem. It's not listed in any of the wars, and in the list in Perek Bet, where it lists the 31 kings that Yoshua conquers, Shechem is not listed there. So how do you go to Shechem, enact an entire ceremony with the entire people of Israel and all of the army, and not engage in a single skirmish? Unless Shechem was somehow allied with Yoshua, and in the conquest of Canaan was not seen as an enemy. Where would Shechem have developed an allegiance or a relationship of some kind of allied status with Israel? From Yaakov. From the Brit that Yaakov makes with them. They're all circumcised. So the allegiance of the people of Shechem, not as a conversion, but as an allegiance component, a part of the Brit, suddenly the story of Shechem is a unique status in the history of the Jewish people, which would explain why Gideon could take a Pelegish from the people of Shechem, and why inside Shechem there could be this turmoil: who should be their king? A descendant, the son of Avimelech, of Gideon, or a descendant of Chamor of Shechem? Which side of this allegiance is going to hold, is going to take hold? So if the Eitzim refer to Balei Shechem and that they are in fact Canaanites, then let's go back to the story. What does the Zayit, Geffen, and Te'ina represent? Why do the Geffen, Zayit, and Te'ina in this regard represent legitimate Israelite descendants? They are Perot Eretz Yisrael. They represent the farmers of Israel. Remember that Israelites are farmers, agricultural. That's how the whole story of the battle with Midian began, with the dream about the bread and the tent, where the Midianites were nomads and the Israelites were farmers. They were seen as farmers. That the trees, ish tachad te'ino, the tachad kfano, great vision about each person sitting under their fig tree, under their vine. This is the vision of Bnei Eretz Yisrael. So the desire, the Te'ina and the Geffen could represent Bnei Yisrael. The Eitzim would represent Balei Shechem. And if that's the case, what is the Etad?
The ruler from Shechem.
Is he? The Atad, according to everybody, is Avimelech, because it's the end of the story where he says, if you wanted Avimelech, if you wanted the Atad is clearly Avimelech according to everybody. How does Avimelech fit into this picture? I have Eitzim representing Balei Shechem. I have Zayit Te'ina VeGeffen representing, and Azel Levanon, no less, which of course fits into the picture of Canaanites. Zayit Te'ina VeGeffen Bnei Yisrael, farmers, fruit-producing trees. Mm-hmm. And Avimelech?
He's the interloper.
That's what's left when you don't have the trees in the farm.
Why is he the interloper?
He doesn't fit either one of the categories.
He fits neither one of the categories because he fits both. Because he is... He's the bastard child of Gideon and his Pelegish. Uh-huh.
Hmm. But the children were
those considered
bastards?
In the Mashal of Yotam,
okay.
That's the...
Metaphorically,
okay. That's the Oketz, right? That's the point.
Right.
Right. And he, you wanted the Gef and the Zayi V'Teina, what you got is the son of a Pilegesh.
Right. That's he's the contender. What did you say? What the contender.
All right, so if that's the and that's the interpretation of the Dat Mikra, that the whole issue revolves around identity. Israelite, Canaanite, who's the legitimate reign of Shechem? Is it descendants of Yaakov, or is it descendants of Hamor or Shechem? Is it Israelite, is it Canaanite? And that what they end up with is a kind of a poor compromise, which will ultimately be their undoing. Here again, however, we're left with a small difficulty. I think the application is probably neater than the Radak's suggestion. It's more parallel, but there's still pieces missing, because according to this, we still have to assume that the people of Shechem went to look for a king. And in their search for a king, they may have gone to the Israelite side, couldn't find one, so they ended up with Avimelech. But in the actual story, they don't go searching for a king ever. Avimelech came and appointed himself over them. So we're still, and we never find any engagement with Bnei Israel over being king of Shechem. Never do we find any effort of Israel to rule over Shechem or to broaden their political control of Shechem. So we're still left with pieces missing. Two possibilities still left with pieces missing. So where do we go from here?
Third interpretation
is probably, in some ways, the least compelling, but the most likely, I think.
Reality?
Yeah. It's not uncommon, by Nevi'im we see it a lot, it's not uncommon to borrow metaphors, to borrow nivuot. Nevi'im did it often, where one Navi would take a previous nivuah of a previous Navi and reapply it to new circumstances. And you see it, for example, in some places where you have whole prakim, where the first part of the parak appears in two separate Nevi'im. The famous Nevu'ah that we saw 2 weeks ago with Malchus about from Yeshayahu Parak Bet, about the swords and the plowshares. That whole Nevu'ah, verbatim, that whole piece appears in Sefer Micha as well. It has a different ending, because there were two different periods of time, and therefore the application of that nevuah was different for each one. But clearly one borrowed the nevuah and then reapplied it. It's like a quotation. Here's the quote, and here's its application. And therefore it's quite possible that this mashal is an existing story. We're all assuming that Yotam invents the mashal, that Yotam presents to them a mashal that fits the events that took place, like by David HaMelech, when the Navi comes to David to criticize him for the story of Bathsheba, and creates a mashal, and there the pieces match the story. But if the mashal is in fact borrowed, if it's an old story, if it's a story that exists, if it's a story that people knew about for years and years and generations, then Yotam's application or borrowing of that mashal may not necessarily be in order to create a one-to-one correspondence to the events that took place, but rather for its conclusion. In other words, it's quite possible that the only piece Yotam really needs from this mashal, it's not the story about the Geffen and the Zayit and the Teina, etc. The only piece of the story that he needs is the one piece which linguistically he himself parallels.
But isn't that what the Radak does?
But the Radak, no. The Radak.
No, I mean, we jump to the punchline, to the moral of the story, the bramble bush and the
The Radak takes as a given that the Mashal meets the Nimshal on some level. The Atad represents Avimelech. The Eitzim represent the people of Shechem. Right? But that's enough to be the story of the application. What I'm suggesting is one step even further removed, which is that if I take the entire Mashal, the Eitzim, the Geffen, the Zayit HaTe'ina, the Atad, the whole piece, and I assume that it is, and the Radak doesn't say this, but it could work for the Radak too, and I assume that it is in fact a pre-existing Mashal that Yotam is borrowing, now I have to ask a different question, which is what's the piece that Yotam wanted to pull out of it? So what I'm going to suggest is that the piece that he wanted to pull out of it was not actually the parallel of the Eitzim to Baalei Shechem and the Atad to Avimelech. What he wanted to pull out of it was not the Mashal. It was the final declaration. It was the final statement. It was the language of the end. Now, if you turn the page over to the text, the chart, What I've done here is the first section from Pasuk Tet Zayin through Chaf is the let's go back to Tanakh. The first part of the Mashal, it goes through the whole story of the people of the trees, going to the different trees, going to the Gef and the Zay, the Teina. Finally, comes to the Atad, and the Atad says, okay. And the phraseology of the Atad is in Pasuk Tet Vav. Vayomer ha'atad el ha'itzim, im be'emet atem moshchim oti lemelech aleichem, if in truth you ask me to be king over you, bo chasu betzili. Ve'im ayin teitze eish me'atad v'tochol et arzei alevano. That's the application in the mashal itself. What I'm suggesting is that this whole story was introduced here because Yotam wanted to pull out that sentence. And if you look at what Yotam actually says to them, you can see this, because he starts with, and here I have the text of Yotam's declaration on the page. I've divided it into boxes so that you can see that he structured it very poetically. Each part of it is divided into three phrases. If you truthfully engaged Avimelech, sincerely, im tova asitem im Yerubal v'imbeto, v'im kigmu yadav asitem lo. Right, three rhetorical questions. Then he opens a parenthesis with three statements about why that engagement was so ironic. Asher nelcham avi alechem, v'yashlechat nafsho mineged, v'yatzel etchem miyad midyan. Three things that Gideon did for the people. He fought for you, he sacrificed for you, he saved you from the hands of Midian. Three ways in which they repaid him good for with evil for the good. Atem kamtam al bet avi hayom v'targu et benav, shivim ish alev en achat, v'tamlichot avimelech ben amato al baleishchem ki achichem hu. None of that's in the Mashal, assuming. Then he comes back to the Mashal. And he says, if truthfully and sincerely you have done with Yerubal today, then simchu b'Avimelech v'yismach kamu b'chem, then rejoice with Avimelech. If you look at the bottom box, on the right-hand side you have the Mashal, and on the left-hand box you have Yotam's application. Phrase for phrase, they line up. Im be'emet atem moshkim oti lemelech aleichem, baruch asu b'tzili. V'im ayin teitzei eish min atar v'tochel et arzei levanon. In Yotam's words, im be'emet uv'tamim, he adds the word tamim, but asitim im Yerubal. V'im ayin teitzei eish min avimelech v'tochel b'aleishchem, teitzei eish min b'aleishchem v'tochel et avimelech. In other words, there's a conclusion in the story. And that's the conclusion that Yotam is drawing on. ancient story, ancient parable, that apply because of the phraseology at the end, and not necessarily by because of a direct one-to-one correlation to each component of the story. However, in so doing, I think there's another subtle message that Yotam has conveyed. And that gets back to the substance of the mashal. What is the real message of the mashal? Separate from the story of Avimelech for a second, if I look at the mashal by itself, the trees go to the Gif and the Zayat, the Teina, they ask him to be their king. And each one responds and says,
no.
Why?
No. They each had an excuse.
They each had they more each than had an excuse.
They also had a,
they each had a reason.
They each
had the same reason.
They had a tafkid.
They had a function. And moreover, they had a productive function. And being king, clearly, in that context of the mashal, is not a productive function. In other words, embedded into the mashal is a challenge to the very essence of the purpose, of purposefulness of kingship. Nobody needs a king. Being a king is a waste of time. They went to the Gef and decided to Tena, they got the right answer. I got more important things to do with my life. So what did you stupid people of the Eitzim do? You went and you got the batad, you got what you deserved. Because you're better off without a king.
No, he's
not asking them to appoint him as king. He's challenging the whole institution of kingship.
He's following what his father, what Gidon said.
Well, that's interesting. Is he following what Gidon said or not?
He doesn't say about Hashem being the king.
Right. See, Gidon had a very different response. Gidon didn't say being a king is a waste of time. He said,
God is your king.
Right, that God is your king.
But Avimelech never mentions.
No, Avimelech wouldn't. Avimelech is culturally Canaanite more than he is Israelite. Don't forget that when he goes and hires his mercenaries, he takes the money from the temple of Baal. Avimelech is more Canaanite than
not
he is Israelite.
So it's not. But if you're saying being a king is a waste of time, then why do you have a king then in the time of Shmuel? I mean, if it's a waste of time...
Mm-mm. I didn't say it's a waste of time.
Yeah.
I said Yotam said it's a waste of time.
Okay.
Yotam's declaration to them is this, is, hey, look, remember the mashal? You want a king? You're going to get what you deserve, because here's the famous mashal about they went to the trees, etc. On the contrary.
Could Yotam be saying, you don't have anything to fear from me, because this is, I'm saying, you know, I know he wants to
I think
stay.
He's too young for that. Remember, he's
maybe.
A young boy. He's telling him
but he's not.
He's telling him bedtime is.
But he's also telling him it's a waste of time, so I'm not interested.
That's true. However, I actually think that Yotam missed the real message of the mashal. If you go back to the mashal itself, I think Yotam misses the point. The point of the mashal is not to challenge the functionality or purposefulness of kingship. The real message in the mashal. They go to the Geffen, they go to the Zayit, they go to the Teina.
But they went to the wrong source for.
They went to the wrong source for king. They go to this Geffen, the Teina, the Zayit, and what they get is. So we understood it as, before as, they have a purposeful for functionality, and they don't want to waste their time with kingship. But if you listen to the language of the Mashal, and I'm assuming he's quoting the Mashal verbatim, if you listen to the language, their language is Hechadalti et Dishni. Should I abandon my fat, my produce? Or in the case of the Zayit, in the case of the Teina, Hechadalti et motki v'et nuvati, should I abandon my sweetness? In the case of the Geffen, Hechadalti et tiroshi, my wine was sameach, enashim v'enashim, which makes man and God happy, or the Tena, which is so wonderful, or the Shemen, which is Yachabed Elohim v'Anashim, Lechad Lanua, it seemed that I should go and sway over the kings, sway over the trees. What he senses is they're not a critique of the Geffen, the Zayit, and the Tena. Embedded into the Mashal, I think, there is some critique of the Geffen, the Zayit, and the Tena for refusal, because the basis of their refusal is not just that they saw the kingship as a waste of time, but that they're
comfortable.
Oil, fruit, wine, these are all symbols of
wealth.
Of wealth, of comfort. I'm living it up. Why do I need to go and
assume
responsibilities for the people and I'm busy with things that are sweet and things that are tasty and things that are honorable. I need to waste my time dealing with communal responsibilities.
But they're also symbols of kingship. Well,
they're a byproduct of kingship. I'm not sure that they're necessarily a symbol of kingship. So what do? In desperation, they go to the one tree that has
no functionality.
Right? But there's a third group in this mashal that Yotam ignores. But I think if you think about it, is probably the core message of the mashal. There's a third group in this grouping of trees. There's the fruit trees. There's the useless bramble, and there are the Arzei HaLevanon, the Lebanon, the trees of Lebanon. When the Atad declares, if you don't make me your king, if you mean I'm your king, if you don't mean that sincerely, then I will destroy the cedars of Lebanon. Beginning with the Mashal, we have Etzim. I put them together. I'm not sure that they go together. I think it's quite possible that you have two different groups. You have the Eitzim, and you have Arzei HaLevanon. Tall.
Can I say Arzei HaLevanon, in my thinking of Tanakh, was distinctive. It was like a very different
Correct.
Kind of tree.
Correct.
It was strong. It was
that's why it's a third. That's why it's a fourth group. I have Eitzim, Geffen, Zayit, Vetena, fruit trees, Atad, and Arzei HaLevanon. And if I have Arzei HaLevanon, think about it in Tanakh terms. Of the four, which are the most appropriate? Which is the most appropriate logical choice for king? Arzei HaLevanon, the tall, powerful, strong, leader-type trees, which in the world of Tanakh were always metaphors for trees, for kings. Every Navi used the cedars of Lebanon as the symbol of kingship, because that was a symbol that people understood. That was a symbol that was classic. The tallest trees in the region, the strongest trees in the region, the trees that Shlomo HaMelech insisted that he would use those trees for the building of the Beit HaMikdash and had to import them. Why? Because the Beit HaMikdash was a palace of kings, in this case the king of kings, so it would be built with the trees that represent kingship. There's an inherent message here. Just as an example, I'll just show you one moment of one two-line nevuah. You can see it in Chezko. Just as an example, Perek Yud Zayin. Perek Yud Zayin. I hope it's the right pair. Wait, wrong sefer. Chafet, starting with. Right, sorry, Yud Zayin. Yud Zayin. Chafet. Perek Yud Zayin, pasuk Chafet. Ko amar Hashem Elokim. Lakachti ani Mitzameret ha'erez harama. I will take a branch from the great high erez, cedar. V'natati, I will take this branch. Mirosh yon katav rach ektof. I will snip off a small branch, soft, from this very top. V'shalachti ani al har gavoa v'talul. I will take this small branch and I will plant it on a mountaintop. Bahar Merom Yisrael Eshtalenu, and a tall tree of Israel, I will plant it. And what will happen to this branch? Asa anaf, asa peri, it will grow, it will bring forth fruit. Vayale erez adir, and it will become a powerful erez. Vishachnu tachtav kol tzipor kol kanaf, under its shade. Remember, the Atad has no shade. Under its shade, every bird, every winged creature will take shelter. Betzel daliotav tishkona. Under its sheltering wings and sheltering branches will they live, will they dwell. V'yadu kol atzei ha-sadeh. All of the trees of the field will know. Ki ani Hashem. Hishpalti etz gavoa. I was able to bring down tall trees. Higbati et shafal, I can raise up low trees. Hovashti et lach, I can dry up moist trees. Hifrachti et yavesh, I can cause dry trees to flourish. Ani Hashem dibarti v'asiti. The message of Yechezkel? We're not talking about trees. We're talking about
Hashem.
Kings.
Oh, I thought it was referring to
Hashem. No, we're talking about kings. We're talking about the rebuilding of the kingdom of Israel. Yechezkel is in Galus. Yechezkel is in the Galut Bavel. He's talking about the reestablishment, the replanting of Malchut Beit David, and the ability to bring down tall trees of empires that have conquered Israel and raise up nations that Israel that has been destroyed, that has been dried out, and re-flourish in its land in the mountains of Israel. The whole symbol of his nevuah is that of Lebanon, of trees, and this greatest symbol of a tree is Erez, is Isaiah Levanon, is the cedar tree. And if that's the case, then the message, the original message of the Mashal, actually has another, pardon the pun, another oketz, another thorn. And that is that when the Geffen, the Teina, and the Rimon refuse kingship, they do so out of a false sense of
importance
or purpose, right? All their own personal reasons. Was the fault in the story lies right? The fault in the story lies in the trees refusing to take on the mantle of leadership. They end up with the bramble because the Geffen, the Zayit, and the Teina refused. Go back to the original part of the story.
Well, you said that we wound up with the lowliest.
Right, we wound up with the lowliest because they refused. So who refused in the story of Yotam?
Gidom.
I think unintentionally, completely, Yotam had no intention of linking this back to Gidom. But the irony is that if I look at the Mashal as a declaration of the value of Malchus and the danger of refusing to step up to the leadership plate when needed, when called upon, which is what happened, that application comes back to the story of Gidon. And the very Mashal that Gidon had introduced, that Yotam had introduced, to criticize Avimelech, and rightly so, also shares within it, kind of boomerangs back on him, because it shares within it a critique of how we got into this mess, which was that you create the need for Malchus, the desire for Malchus, the value of Malchus, and then you shut it down for whatever false sense of modesty or misplaced modesty that you have. In the case of Geffen, Zayit, V'Teina, in the case of Gidon, clearly a sense of misplaced modesty. I'm not your king. God is your king. But a king has to understand that modesty, while it has value, if it's misplaced, can be his undoing. It can be his destructive. Look at Avimelech. Look at Shaul. Shaul's greatest asset was his undoing, which was the modesty, the false modesty, misplaced modesty, that ultimately led him to his own faults. So that may be another level of the story that may connect us back to the world of Gideon. All right, I think we have essentially concluded this unit on Gideon. I'm going to stop here, and we're going to move on to Perek Yud next week.